This is Across Divides, a series of stories and experiences from communities across the island of Ireland as they meet shared challenges and consider opportunities for collaboration. Find out more at icommunityhub.org.
My name is Susie Cann, and in this episode, we're going to be exploring the challenges and the opportunities of social enterprises all across this island. There are many new areas that are open for cooperation, and to discuss all of this, I'm joined today by Maeve Monaghan, the CEO of Now Group, a social enterprise that supports people with barriers to employment and learning into the workforce. Also by Rosemary Kinnean, founder of Dignity Partnerships, a social enterprise that promotes self-employment and provides support for people who are or who have been in the direct provision system in the Republic of Ireland. She's currently undertaking a Master's in Cooperative Studies and Social Enterprise in Cork. And also by Martin Ward, General Manager of Bounce Back Recycling, a social enterprise that provides opportunities for people facing barriers to employment in traveller communities. We might start by talking a bit about, is that one of the key challenges, that people face barriers to employment, and why, Maeve, does social enterprise model work for addressing that?
Yeah, well, thanks, first of all, Susie, for inviting me today. I'm just delighted to be part of this conversation. Anything that's about social enterprise interests me, and I really do see the opportunity for collaboration across the island of Ireland. I think barriers to employment is a fundamental thing, particularly, you know, our organisation was born in the north of Ireland, and we're now expanding into the Republic of Ireland as well. But we have such a big gap between the need for people to fill jobs and a significant number of people who are economically inactive. And I think that the challenge around that is that it's different languages that are being spoken, and the gap is so wide, and the level of understanding isn't there between the two parties, I suppose. And I think social enterprise provides a really, really good bridge between employers who need people, and they need really, really good people, and really good people who can do a good job, but maybe don't have the skills, experience, or the confidence that's needed to understand that they have the same right as anybody else to have the access to those jobs. And I think an organization like ours has been spending over 20 years, you know, breaking down a lot of the myths, particularly for people who have disabilities. You know, I've been in this game long enough now to have had really depressing conversations in the early days about the capabilities of people with disabilities. You know, I would have been asked, well, as you know, we have Love Catering, which is one of our social enterprises, is a catering business. And I would have been asked questions like, well, would you really, could somebody with a learning disability really work in a cafe? Or would I really want somebody with a disability making my food? And I was astounded at the time that that was the kind of questions I was being asked. But I think organisations like ours are breaking a lot of those myths down so that people understand that the best businesses are reflective of our whole community. And the more inclusive and diverse businesses are, the better it is for business. So I see social enterprises as being that innovative spark that brings really good people together with businesses who need really good people. And, you know, I just see lots of possibility to do more of that in the months and years ahead.
Fantastic. Rosie, breaking down myths, I wonder, in, you know, Dignity Partnership, when you first started, was there something that echoes what Maeve's talking about?
Yes, it definitely does. And I should also say, like, Maeve, thank you so much for inviting me here. And I was actually interested in the way Maeve was speaking about bringing people together to solve a problem. And that's exactly the same thing that Dignity Partnership does. You know, there is this myth that goes, or people would think, people living in direct provision, they are just a burden to the state. And also most of them would have barriers to employment, yet they do have a certain skill that they can be self-employed. but then the supports are not there. So Dignity Partnership is there to break the myth and also to provide that network. Because as an individual like myself, if I want to set up a business as someone who is just new in the country, it's almost as impossible because I need the social networks. I need the business networks as well. So Dignity Partnership is there to provide that access to the wider Irish business community and also to encourage and motivate people to say, you know, if you have this skill, you can do it. You don't have to sit back and say, oh, I cannot get employed, yet you have a certain skill that can actually bring you an income. So what do we need? We just need to support people. We just need personal development. We just need enterprise development and also guidance on how things are done in Ireland. Because coming from where I come from, if I want to start maybe a snack business, I just start making the business and knock on my neighbor and start selling. But here is a different story. There's a lot that I need to do. There's a lot of regulations. So people need to know what regulations are there for them to go into business. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, I hope that answers you.
Absolutely does. Yeah. Martin, where did your social enterprise fit into that?
Yeah, well, I suppose the driving force to establish and bounce back recycling was the creation of employment for members of the traveller community, because there's been a consistently high rate of unemployment of 80% plus, even during boom times in Ireland. And we would, like, the majority of that comes from the root cause, which is racism and discrimination faced by the community. So we said that's a big challenge for any organisation to take on. So while we were going after the societal change, how could we utilise the skill that was within our own community? So we took a step back and said, well, what can we create internally? And that's what led us to looking at the social enterprise model, because there's been so many reports done on the community, and we're more than just stats. This was a real life project, creating jobs, bridging the gap and delivering environmental impacts that, like, you know, was good for the whole of Irish society. So you can bridge that gap. So, you know, initially we didn't even think about the environmental impact, but it was those barriers to work. And then I suppose in 2017, the Community Foundation of Ireland did a study in Ireland, and only 17% of non-travellers said they would employ a traveller. Yes, the myth is out there that travellers don't want to work, but when you have that little amount of opportunities, you know, that really turned it on its head. It wasn't blaming the community for not wanting to work. It was suddenly, well, actually, there was no opportunities. So we have worked and supported people then to move into mainstream employment. That's still quite slow because of the bias and the issues and stuff. But, you know, we would say to the staff, we'll do it one mattress at a time. That's what's within our control. And to date, we've recycled 70,000 mattresses, which really has opened a number of doors for, I suppose, for bounce back, but more importantly, for community members to move on and progress and challenge the myth that travellers don't want to work.
So we've kind of started with busting myths, but also that agenda of inclusion seems to be weaving through the conversation. Do you think you face, you know, learning from each other or listening as we've begun, do you think you face this similar, or what are the differences in those barriers to inclusion? Like, Martin, you're talking about something very historical, you know, as you say, multiple studies. Is that similar to the historical issues for disability?
Similarities across a lot of them. And I think, you know, sometimes the people can be very selective. So if you look at the nine grounds as protected under the Equal Status Act in Ireland, some might say, well, we might, you know, for instance, we might just take, like, the women from there are people with disabilities, are travellers, and we're advocating, well, no, it should be everyone across the nine grounds. If you're inclusive and you want a diverse workforce, you need to include everybody. So it's not just hand-picking or cherry-picking from the different groupings. You know, that's so important, like, that it, you know, shouldn't be allowed to happen, even for people that advocate or support, and that it should be right across the board for all communities, that, you know, the workforce, whether, like, if it's 100 in the job and travellers make up 1%, well, at least one of those jobs should be travellers. Same with people with disabilities. If they make up 10% of the workforce in that company should disabilities, you know, or asylum seekers, or what, you know, to get the right mix and balance that actually reflects Irish society now, as we stand today.
I agree, Martin, and I think, you know, everybody's needed. I think in today's society, particularly in the workforce, there are so many gaps in employment, and every business I speak to says, you know, one of the questions I always ask them when I come to meet them, they're a little bit nervous because they think I'm coming asking for something. And, you know, I've been involved in this area for long enough to know, you know, it used to be that nearly, oh, go on, would you give one of our participants a job, please, and to get going. And I've moved away from that completely now. So, you know, what we would be saying is, where are you hurting? Where is your absolute pain point? And every business now, particularly in Northern Ireland, there's lots of conversations about Brexit along with everything else and supply chains and whatever. But the main thing that business talk about is, you know, the need for staff at all levels, the turnover, the cost of recruitment. So therefore, we're coming with a solution to that. And I think it's right. You can't just pick and choose in relation to that. You need everybody, and you need everybody at every level. But what I tend to find with businesses is they're afraid. They're afraid of doing it wrong, getting it wrong, getting in trouble. They kind of just, instead of doing anything, you know, in the fear of doing wrong, they don't do anything. And I would say, you know, you need to get going, you need to start somewhere. But once you get started, that's not enough. You have to continue. And that idea of inclusion and diversity should be right across the organisation, just like Martin says. But I think mindsets are changing, but they're being driven by the need to look elsewhere for people to fill employment jobs. And that's where the opportunity comes for social enterprises at the minute to do a really, really good job where we can't be done without. And then to place really brilliant people, so the businesses start to realise that our participants and the people we support are as good, if not better, than everybody else that's in the workplace. And I think that's the feedback we're getting from businesses. It's good for business. It works for them.
Yeah, I actually, just to add on what has been said, even like for Dignity Partnership, we actually look into two ways to say our members can actually be self-employed in a company where you're working, you know, under the contract. And also maybe like if you're in the catering business, you're also given that opportunity. I don't know where you can go and cater for an event. And we see there is that, I think Maeve has mentioned, say there is that, you know, some of the companies should have the fear of the unknown. If I'm going to engage this particular person, are they knowledgeable? Are they going to deliver? But then the question is, how would you know if they can deliver if you don't give them a chance? Yeah. You know, often you see people would be taken in as internship. That one you see a lot of companies, oh, okay, we want diversity. Oh, bring in, you have people from this background. Okay, they can go on a 6 month internship. All right, fine. I've gone through that 6 month internship. What is next after that? I'm left. I'm back to square one. So for us, we say if you take people for internship, it doesn't have to be a paid internship, even if it's for free. But then after the 6 months, try to see if you cannot take them, maybe signpost them somewhere else where they can work, maybe even as self-employed on a contract.
And social enterprises, all of you are also setting them up as trading businesses. So one of the things that I've often heard in the social enterprise sector is people saying, we have to do all the things that a business has to do, and then we do all this extra. So it's business plus, 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 plus. What are you finding are those plus, plus, pluses? And are you finding that that's something your trading activity supports? Are there other you know, barriers to getting the plus 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 into the social enterprise? Martin, or any of you, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, Martin. Well, you know, I have this question a lot, and I actually discuss it quite a bit internally as well. And what I would always say is that's why we're a social enterprise and not a business. If we didn't have to do the plus plus plus, we would just be a business. So we have to start with that premise that we don't have a bottom line target, although we you know, it's not, we're not doing this for shareholders. We all have a mission, and the mission is the plus plus plus. But I think that said, there's a challenge in relation to be able to deliver all of the support that's needed, because it's not like, if it was really easy for one of our participants to get a job, they would already have it. You know, there's a support, there's a pre-employment piece, there's a support to get into a job piece, and then there's an after-employment piece. And, you know, one of the reasons why now Group is so successful in that, you know, I just got a stat today where our team has supported 102 people with disabilities into jobs this year. So that's from April last year to end of March. So really, really good, really good success rate there. And it kind of busted a lot of the myths about how many disabled people could get into work. But that doesn't stop when that job starts. That support is required to be ongoing. And it's not just for the participant, it's for the employer as well. Because the breakdown doesn't happen the day after interview or the first day they start. It might happen a week or a month after that. And particularly, well, I suppose for a lot of groups, but certainly for our participants, their disability doesn't go away. You know, it's a constant thing. So, you know, and things that might be challenging one day might not be challenging the next. So I think that ongoing support, how that's funded. We have a mix in our organisation of generated income and funding for some of those support programmes. But I think that's what makes us special. It's a challenge. There's a never-ending balance between the kind of social mission and the financial, the need to drive profit. But that's what makes us a social enterprise. And I always say to people, you're either up for it or you're not.
Yeah. Martin, are you up for it?
That's it. I think it's what keeps us going. And a lot of people that's involved in this sector, it is about the plus, plus, plus. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, I remember saying to somebody once, unless you really cared about the mission that you're trying to drive and the change that you're trying to create, you probably wouldn't be in this sector. Do you know what I mean? Because while there is lots of challenges and barriers, like there's so much rewards as well. You know, like for me, I'm a member of the traveller community. We've created 16 jobs and Bounce Back. That's like 1,600 jobs in the non-traveller population. You know, it means that much because we're only 1%. And the fact then that we actually can bust a mitt and say, well, sorry, we've recycled 70,000 mattresses. And we would always say, like, we're reclaiming our community space as the original recyclers on the island, linking it back to the tinsmiths. So travellers were in use, and when we look at turning metal into buckets and then the plastic drove that trade away, and now we're trying to do away with the plastic again, where if we had to invest in, you know, the circular economy from a community level, and lots of minority groups, we'd be so far along the agenda of the circular economy now. So yeah, I think while there is lots of barriers, but there's like the rewards offset them then, so you know, very positive space to be in.
Yeah. And Rosie, you're doing a master's in social enterprise and cooperative studies, and I'm curious how much your educational journey, as for you yourself, and you know how that has made you a bit of a leader within the space of social enterprise in Ireland, and you know how your understanding from either a global perspective, like you said, the changes that you would have encountered coming to Ireland. What are you seeing in terms of opportunities in the sector that you're seeing, that you're learning about, that are really, I guess, as people, as Martin and Maeve were saying, there's something, you know, there's a lot of positives in being engaged in, you know, working here in this way rather than working in business.
Well, okay, that's a bit difficult one for me, but I should say the lessons that I'm learning from my studying with UCC. It's actually the driving force to the work that I'm doing with Dignity Partnership. And there is loads of potential for social enterprises here in Ireland, I mean, all Ireland. And the kind of study that we do, the teachings that they give us, is something that I would recommend that every social enterprise should learn about, especially on how to market yourself as a social enterprise. Like it's been said by Martin and Maeve about the challenges, there used to be some time that myself, I'll be like, you know what, I am giving up on this. But then when I'm doing my assignment, I learn something and I'll be like, no, actually, I can implement this in my work. And at the end of the day, for me, it's not even studying. It's like I am doing something. It's something that I go back for my work to say, okay, I'm stuck here. How can I solve this problem? For us, when we started off Dignity Partnership, we didn't really have much support, much funding, and we were supporting people that were unable to actually pay for any service or any training that we were doing. But we kept on calling ourselves as a social enterprise. Although if you look into the definition of a social enterprise, you find that we were not falling under it. But we stuck to that. And like my colleagues have mentioned, to say, it's the work that you do, the plus that motivates you. For me, it was hearing the testimonies from the people that we're supporting, hearing someone saying, you know what, Rose, that workshop came at a very good time. I thought I was going to give up. I thought that was the end of me. But the way you gave the workshop, you're giving me hope that I can actually do my business in this country. That would actually energize me to say, okay, I better just, you know, move forward. And then there was one module that we did on governance. And I would be there looking at, you know, my governance structure. And I'm like, I think I'm missing something here. So I need to push on that. So anyway, just to round it up, I would say this social enterprise courses, I think I would recommend that is something that needs to be taken up by almost all the universities or the colleges, just to promote it and also encourage other people to go into this social enterprise sector.
Yeah, interesting. And the supports, like you were just saying, Rosie, the supports around starting up a social enterprise. So Maeve, you've been there for, you said, 20 years. Martin, I know you're in existence a while too. For new entrants, for people trying to get into the sector anywhere on the island, do you think that the opportunities are there? Something I know, it's a phrase that I've talked with Rosie before about, the idea of being in the community that you're and of the community that you're trying to help, you know, and understanding that. Or, you know, there's a phrase that I've heard from a business school actually talking about the idea of heropreneurs, kind of coming out, not deeply embedding yourself in the issues that are being experienced by the people that you're helping, like more apprenticing yourself to the community you want to help. How is the sector evolving in your experience? How do you think the supports are going to be there for really meaningful scaling? We talk about scaling in social enterprise a lot, but scaling the whole sector on the island.
This is a real passion point of mine. Sorry, Ruth, go ahead.
It's okay. Okay, I wanted to say, in my own experience, the support is there, but there is more to be done. So personally, we've received support from the Social Entrepreneurs Island and the Social Impact Island that have been supporting us. But there is a lot of like giving knowledge. But then once you get that knowledge, where is, you know, the real support, the finance side of things for one to start? I know there are other bigger organizations that are supporting social enterprise to start off. But the challenge that we found ourselves as Dignity Partnership was that we are applying for the funding and then we're being told, where is your traded income? You need to show your traded income for you to qualify as a social enterprise. So how do we start trading when we don't even have the capital to start trading? So for us, we just had to say, you know what, let's just do with what we have and move at a very, very slow pace. So I would say the support is there, but there's need, especially for grassroots and social enterprise that are just starting. there's more support that is needed than just providing the trainings that are being given out there.
Yeah. Maeve, do you want to continue?
Yeah, I would agree. I think in relation to startup, lots of advice about how you set one up, what the governance models are. And, you know, a number of years ago, there wasn't even that. So that's really good progress. North and South, there's definitely really good foundations there with the social enterprise networks and some funding that comes through on that. And I think all of that's good, but I have seen so many business plans that add up at the bottom but are not realistic. So real honest conversations with people about what is viable and what's not has to happen. Just because it's a nice to do doesn't mean it's going to be a sustainable business. You know, I see it a lot, particularly with community cafes, for instance, where everybody, you know, everybody looks at the loaf model and they think, oh, we all want to have a social enterprise cafe. And I say, well, do you really? Because it's really hard to make money and it's really hard slog. And that is not the solution to all of it. You have to work really hard at it. And I think there's an element of challenge that's needed back to start up social enterprises to see, you know, where is the longevity of this? Where is the commerciality of it? But also then when there is a really good idea, where is the working capital? You know, most social enterprises can't go to a mainstream bank and ask for a loan. That, you know, that even the understanding of the model of social enterprise is a challenge for most institutions. I know there is an organization called Community Finance Ireland that works north and south, and they're, you know, they have a particular interest in community and third sector organizations, and they understand the model more. But there's work to be done there. And I always say, just give me a bit of money and let me get on with it. I know what I'm doing. We could definitely get it done. You're talking to entrepreneurs. And it's a different conversation with an entrepreneur than it is with somebody who's running a funded project. And that's not to say, because we run both, so I understand that. That's not to say one's better than the other, but you have to trust entrepreneurs as well and let them get on with it. I would say the other part on it, Susie, is, you know, you're absolutely spot on. Lots and lots of conversation about scaling, but no real challenge and, you know, pathway about how that can happen. You know, we've done quite a bit of scale. You know, we would be seen to be, I suppose, a bigger social enterprise with some of the areas that we have, but very, very little support out there for organisations who want to go from the £1 million turnover to £5 million, for instance. I know that can sound... You know, I said that in another forum, people thought, well, like, you can't be greedy. And I think this is a business. We have to scale. We need significant scale to be able to deliver the mission that's needed. And we have to not be afraid to say that and be okay with making profit and wanting to make more money. So I think, you know, early start, definitely more of a challenge, more bridge in finance, more understanding of social enterprise by funded, you know, finance organizations. But then that next stage of scale, we are going to need significant scale to deliver with, you know, to deal with the issues that are coming down the line for our most marginalized communities. And the bigger social enterprises are, the better. And we need as much of that as possible to be able to deliver on missions.
Martin, are you finding that ambition is there in the social enterprise networks that you might be part of? Do you think that the idea that, you know, you've mentioned your output from employment terms, but you're also, you know, the 70,000 mattresses, is there this niche that social enterprises are beginning to occupy and they could do even more?
Yeah, I think for sure. I think that space is starting now to, you know, that change and looking at the scaling. And I think if there's an opportunity to scale, there's a willingness within the social enterprises to do that. But again, it's the funding to scale, because we're all there about the impacts we're creating. So we would say, you know, a lot of social enterprises, you know, are set up for social or environmental or the societal change. And we would say we deliver the hat trick of those within our social enterprises. So we are starting to scale now. So we're looking by 2024 to have 30 travelers employed in the project and recycle 100,000 mattresses a year. So we are working with Rethink Ireland on that, and we get support from the Department of Rural and Community Development for staffing. And it was great that in 2019, we finally had a strategy for social enterprises, you know, for the first time ever, which, you know, at least, and more funding, and there's more talk about social enterprises since that, at least. But it is challenging for startup social enterprises. And I think one of the challenges as well is that in the South, we don't get any funding through the business support. So the Department for Trade and Business don't support social enterprises. So we need to get change on that, because that's maybe where the scale and the funding comes, you know, through the Enterprise Ireland or the local enterprise offices. But we're not actually seen as a business, you know, because I think at times, you know, social enterprise was nearly seen as a charity, and you kind of go and please give us this or please give us a job, and we're kind of saying, no, there's no, them days are gone. We actually have a solution for your problem, and now it's time to engage on a different platform as such. And, you know, because like it is risk, and a lot of these are started by community projects and stuff like that for the right reasons, but it's trying to get that balance, as Maeve have said. And then, you know, for the sector to realize that profit isn't a nasty word. It's actually what you do with the profits is the most important part of it, you know. So it's, you know, we generate money. We reinvested in other areas. So we partly funded 24 travelers doing a level 7 community development diploma with a project we ran with NUI Galway, you know, so that was delivering another impact outside of employment. That was an educational impact. So there's lots you can do if you can even generate the surpluses to reinvest back in. But it's kind of a conversation that needs to be had in the sector as well, because similar to me, if I came from a business background, you're trying to be balanced that with the community stuff. I think I would say at times this sector softened me a bit, but you know, you can't, when you see, it's not then, you soon realize it isn't only about the bottom line. There's so much more than just the profits. It's, you know, the impacts, talking, the stories, the difference it makes to the staff, their families, the community, you know. So, but I think there's a lot more that could be done, but I think it's moving in the right direction for sure.
And you're saying there, Martin, it's that in the Republic of Ireland, there was a strategy published in 2019. Maeve, you operate now in the Republic of Ireland and in Northern Ireland. You started out in Northern Ireland. I'm curious about the lessons we can learn from each other, since the sector was established in the North, had a different, even different legal forms, all the differences that were there. Do you think that if we looked at social enterprise on an all-island basis, as a sector, I mean, whatever about as the government departments and policies, but the sector itself cross-collaborating, have you seen things that brings to the table, I guess?
Yeah, I haven't seen many of them yet, but I think I've sensed some people open to the conversation, and I think that's always a good place to start. You know, so we would have moved, being what you would call, well, what I say, like a relatively big fish in a small pond in Northern Ireland, and then look down to the Republic of Ireland and think, it's just so much bigger and we're not known. And we had a really good lead in, because one of our social enterprise initiatives, Jamcard, just went viral, rolled the whole way through the Republic of Ireland, picked up by the transport network, picked up by Lidl Ireland, you know, all of the banks. So that kind of got us an introduction there, which was great. So when I went to start to speak,
I know what a jam card is, but maybe people listening in don't know what a jam card is.
When I talk about our different brands, I say we have a family of brands, and I have different explanations for them all. And I call jam card the blue eye boy. It's the one in your family, the person in your family that everybody knows. And anytime I go somewhere, they say, oh, are you related to Jamcard? So people might not know about Now Group. They might not know about Loaf. They might not know about our consultancy business, Gage. But most people have heard or seen a Jamcard. And that's a card that's been designed by people with intellectual disabilities and autism. And JAM means just a minute. It's short for just a minute. And it's a card that can be used, a card or an app that can be used on public transport, in shops, anywhere where you need people to just stop a minute and give you a minute. So it's just a minute of patience, and that was designed by our participants initially just for them to use in Belfast, and it's proved so successful. We have about 95,000 Jamcard users now across the UK and Ireland, and actually wider afield. And what it goes to show is it's for anybody that has a hidden disability or communication issue, where just that point of contact, you get so worried about getting it right that you get so stressed that you don't do it. And that's part of the inclusion initiative. So JAM really has rolled out. We now, the social enterprise model is businesses paid become JAM card friendly, and anybody who requires a JAM card can get one for free. And we have about 3,500 businesses paying to be JAM card friendly now, and lots of exciting new ones coming online. But that idea of that gives us an introduction into the Republic of Ireland. And I suppose what we're interested in, what people seem to be interested in, is the model that we have that's around moving significant numbers of disabled people into work. You know, really moving that dial. You know, we have a plan to support 600 people into paid work over the next 2 years. You know, we're wanting to really scale that up. And then I get a challenge back where people say, I know, but are they, you know, do they stay in work? Is it quality? And we have a target to have 85% retention, so people will still be in the job after 6 months, which I would challenge any mainstream program to have that kind of retention rate. So I think what people are interested in is the commerciality piece along with the jobs outcome, but also focusing on the participants. So I've had lots of interesting conversations where people think, is that model transferable to other groups who may be marginalized, and what could we do together? Because I am an entrepreneur, I'm just thinking, well, as we start to look, we hope to have 2 new loaf sites in the Republic in the next 2 years. We want to have a full employment program operating there, supporting people. I'm thinking, well, I have to employ people, so where will my diverse workforce come from? And I don't, you know, so I'm looking at all the other, you know, faces around the conversation, and I'm thinking, like, what could we do around that? And I'm thinking the need is so big, we all have to be able to work together. So collaboration will be key, and just, you know, not people not feeling threatened. You know, she's coming down from the north to take over our work or something, but to understand that there's enough work to go around, and collaborations work really well. I find it really, really easy to collaborate with the private sector, much more than I find it easy to collaborate with the public sector or even other social enterprises, because there's a gatekeeping thing that can go on at times. So I can have that conversation with business, and I can say, where are your issues? So you do this and we do that, and we could work together. So that's the kind of conversations I'd love to have. And supply chain opportunities. You know, our catering business, you know, has a target to turn over £2 million by next year. So if you think of that, think of all the things I have to buy in that supply chain. Who's growing vegetables? Who's making product that we can sell? How can we do business together? I think is one of the really, really exciting things that we should be talking about, because supply chain is one of the best opportunities for us to scale our businesses.
Martin, your supply chain is, as you said, circular economy, and it is definitely something that I've seen in social enterprise across the island. That and I loved hearing you talk about that traditional, like a circle that's come around for the members of the travelling community to say, we're specialists in this, we can help. So is that a particular area that the supply chain has to change? We have to think about, you know, the whole life cycle of supply chain, and how is that something that you think social enterprises, why is it that's an area of expansion for social enterprise in on the island?
Yeah, well, I think it's a key area, and there has been lots of collaboration, because through the Community Resource Network of Ireland and Northern Ireland, you know, driving that circular economy piece. So even like we're based in Galway, but there's USIL up in Belfast who would be doing mattress recycling as well. There's somebody in Leinster, Eco Mattresses, and then we had Boomerang down in Cork. But it is trying to drive that whole piece around circularity and bringing like the manufacturers to the table, the retailers to the table. Like, we've an expertise, us being ready and maybe leading that way. So we've a lot of knowledge and expertise in the area around, like, so we've deconstructed 70,000 mattresses now. We probably can tell you what's inside them before we even open them up, you know, and how it would make it much easier to do it. I think we're, again, timing is always key in this. And I think because the environmental piece is so high on the agenda now, and people know that they have to move in that direction. So we'd be lobbying for an extended purchaser responsibility in on the island for taking back mattresses, that the retailer should take back the mattresses. And then we work with the retailer to recycle the mattresses, you know, so that, that way we will know where every mattress goes. We'll tighten the gap. So, you know, if retailer sells 500,000 mattresses between them, 500,000 has to come back in. It's much easier. Right now, we don't know where mattresses end up, how many goes to landfill, how many actually ends up in the bog or the side of the road, how many gets recycled properly, you know, so it's a way of tightening that up. But, you know, and again, the social procurement piece will be a key driver on this. So, like, we got a contract from the prison service in Ireland, which was great, you know, that they went after the social procurement, and the government realizing that they can deliver so much more bang for their buck across a number of departments if they're really set, and a part of those contracts going to social enterprises who are driving change for so many communities that wouldn't get an opportunity otherwise. Yeah. So it's putting a value on the work we do. And if they really value it, then they can go after social procurement, they can go after, and businesses really, you know, buying into this whole social enterprise sphere.
Yeah. And that, I mean, Rosie, the impact part that Martin's just referring to, that if these social enterprises are successful, that they have incredible knock-on impacts. You are making impact without trading, without funding, without support. Is that something, you know, as you said, the testimonies, can you talk a little bit more about that impact and what, you know, what have you been seeing? And do you track that other than the testimonies? Is that hard to keep, you know, keep telling the story of impact?
Oh, thank you. So yeah, we do try and track the impact. And it's something like that we've said earlier on. I think Maeve talked about it, about the training, the importance of training. So prior to maybe last year, we were not tracking any impact. We were just saying, okay, you know what? We help, we do this personal development training, off you go, and that was it. But then from last year, we actually learned how to do a strategy and have key performance KPIs, key performance indicators. And yeah, we actually use something that I learned from you, so have a framework, have a framework model, and be able to track the impact that you're making, so that you can actually duplicate or you can multiply that impact into the work that we're doing.
Yeah. I know, Maeve, that's why you set up Gauge, isn't it? That one of the Now Group is the challenge is that impact might start happening, you know, as Martin said, he was setting up initially to make jobs, and that, you know, but there almost the minute that you begin, other impacts start happening. But it's hard to tell that story, isn't it? And hard to make sure you are in some way being, you were able very a few minutes ago to just immediately give a statistic, you know, about how many people had employed this year.
So there's a little bit of a backstory to that. In the very early days, before we were, I suppose, as, you know, sustainable, before we had as much income trade, we were really, really reliant on one particular fund that required funding from the Department for Health, and we lost it. And I had to go to all the different FDs of different departments and ask for money. And I went in to do a pitch about Now Group. And it was a financial director in the meeting. He asked me all these questions, and I had this great story about our participants and the difference that it made and the progress. And he wasn't interested in that. He wanted to know about numbers, and he wanted to know if they give them money, what was I going to do with it that would be different? And I swore I would never go into a meeting like that again. And it wasn't that I was going to forget about those stories, because that's the raison d'être for the organization, but I realized I need two stories. I need to know the really, really good stories about the participants and the difference it makes, but I need to know the financial return of the work that we do as well. So at that time, we would have been getting evaluations done as part of every program, a budget in for evaluation. And I looked into my office cupboard and I had nine evaluations sitting in folders. And I would have to be honest, not even I had read them all. And I thought, there's something wrong here. We're paying money for an external consultant to come in and do this evaluation, and it's not making it. I still wasn't able to answer the questions. So we decided to start measuring or the social return on investment across the organization and every single part of any of the staff. And now I'll tell you, the first thing I ask them is, so what? You know, why are we doing it? What difference does it make? If it's not making a difference, why are we, you know, why bother? So, and there's been quite a bit of work that we've had to do recently about remembering that, because what happens is there's so many good stories, but you forget them. And people are so busy delivering on it. You need somewhere to gather them and collect them and kind of curate them and tell that story back. And I think our sector has been so busy doing. And so busy, like doing amazing work on a shoestring, we haven't been really good at selling ourselves. So part of it was about gathering that information so that I would never be in that situation again, but also was part of it about gathering it so that anybody could tell the story about the difference it now makes. So yes, Gage does that for funding organizations, for social enterprises and charities, and has a good bit of work around it now, which is great. But people will say to me, well, which funder are you doing it for? And I say, no, I'm doing it for us. We're doing it for us, and then the funders follow. And I think that would be one of the things that would be important. You know, you want your information to do with your impact for your own organization, and then you can translate who you give it to afterwards. But you have to collate it and create it, or it's forgotten.
Yeah, I think you probably will have much demand if you haven't already for Gage services, because I think that impact first or impact measurement is something that seems to be something people are getting very switched on to, because otherwise, as you say, you're not selling what you do, you know, enough out into the wider conversation.
Sorry, apologies, Susie. Somebody's won a free ice cream at school today, and he couldn't wait until the podcast was over to tell him.
That's all right. We could see him coming in the background. That's his story for the day. Folks, we're nearly out of time anyway, but is there any last comments that each of you would like to make in terms of what you've been listening to from each other and that space of, as you say, we are entrepreneurs together. We have a particular way of looking at social problems, environmental problems. Is there something that you've heard from each other that you think would be interesting to pursue in a collaborative way, in, you know, what's kind of landed with you in the conversation? Rosie, we might go to you and then work our way around and we'll finish off shortly.
Right. I actually couldn't agree more with what Maeve talked about, like when you are making the impact, when you're writing up the impact, you're doing it for yourself, not for the funders. I actually happened to find out that I'm spending most of my time doing admin work or maybe applying for funding, and it's not even working. So I told myself, why can't I put my house in order and have think that I need to look onto it for myself, not for funding. And I actually reached a point to say, I am not actually going for any funding. I have to convince myself that, okay, really, this one, I am getting it. So actually what I've learned from Maeve now is that the two stories that we need to have, the impact that you're making and also the impact that your finances that comes in, the impact that that finance would do. So it doesn't matter whether you're getting the money from any funder or is your income generating activities bringing in money for you. It's for us as social enterprise to actually see how can we multiply our income to make that impact. So that's what I'm actually, that's my take home for today.
Thanks, Rosie. Martin.
Yes, similar. Like there's lots of learning, I think, in these spaces and stuff. And we've always tried, whether it was on the island or whether it was European or even further afield. Like, so we would have looked to Australia, yeah, and the Aborigine community facing similar barriers to what travellers face on this island, you know. And funny enough, there's a mattress recycling project doing the same in Australia for the Aborigine community as what we're doing in this. So sometimes when you look further afield or have these discussions, you realise that you aren't mad, that others are in the space, and there is a space to drive on the agenda and scale up, and how important that scale is. Because if we don't, there'll be so many left behind, you know what I mean? So when we had started this project, we looked at maybe like 3 to 5 jobs. We're already at 16. And, you know, coming from a business background or an entrepreneurship, then when there's an opportunity, then you should drive that on. Like, it would be quite easy for me as a manager to say, no, let's keep it nice and niche. I shouldn't drive it on. But, you know, for me, the growth of the social enterprise is what keeps me here. If it became static, I'd probably be out the door as quick as lightning, because it's no longer a challenge. You know, so if there's an opportunity to grow, we shouldn't restrict ourselves as social enterprises. You know, we get all the groundwork done. Of course, you know, like, funding is key and all of that. But if you can get it and you can grow, I think we shouldn't be holding back, because it isn't about us as individuals. It's about the impact to the communities we represent. So if I restricted it at 5 jobs, there was 11 other travellers that wouldn't have got a job. And if I can grow it to 30, there was 25 more left behind. Because sometimes without our expertise, the stats aren't going to change as quickly as they're needed.
Yeah, and Maeve.
Yeah, I agree with both speakers. You know, I think what I take away from today is there's lots of opportunity for all of us to collaborate. You know, the island is not that big, really, although it looked quite big when I was looking down at it from Belfast, but it's really not that big, and the need is getting bigger. You know, we're coming out of COVID. We have issues, you know, there's war in the world. We have significant issues to do with fuel poverty and just food poverty, and people are really struggling. And we are part of the solution. And I think we all have to work together. And that's why I've met 2 fellow entrepreneurs that I'll be following up with afterwards to see if we can do business together. But also, you know, back to your previous point, Rosie, where you asked whether things to do across the island. I think there's work going on at the minute around the Social Value Act in Northern Ireland and getting that through within the year. There'll be a 10% requirement for social value on all public sector contracts, and that'll be going up to 20% next year. And I think an all-island approach to that type of procurement would make a significant difference as well. And I suppose cross-selling and promoting each other, because, you know, as Martin and Rosie both said, we are a really good solution to business that are looking for us at the moment. You know, that ESG piece is really, really big. Businesses want to be seen to be inclusive, diverse, environmental. They want to look at social goals, and we are really part of that answer. So I think by buoying each other up, we're starting to be seen as a cohesive sector. We're not all doing the same thing, but we're supporting each other, and we're making sure that we're getting opportunities through public sector tenders and business, you know, with private sector as well. And I think that collaboration is required if we're going to do, you know, meet the big needs that are coming down the line with our public, you know, the participants that we're supporting.
Fantastic. This has been a really interesting conversation. Social enterprise has been something that I've been involved with, so it's definitely close to my heart to hear all of the thoughts you've had in terms of the different aspects of social enterprise on the island at different stages of development and with different communities, and that that understanding its strengths and understanding the strength of what we bring to the table in social enterprise has been just fantastic to hear. So thank you all for coming along today. We're going to let you help your little one redeem their ice cream voucher, and that's us for today. That's a recording wrap.
You have been listening to Across Divides. Learn more about today's topic and find opportunities to get involved at icommunityhub.org. iCommunity is a joint initiative of The Wheel and NICFA and is supported by the Northern Ireland Department for Communities, the Department of Foreign Affairs Reconciliation Fund, and the Shared Island Unit in the Department of the Taoiseach.